The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Capaccio now on the Wester Hotline. Good morning. It's a beautiful Monday. And the preseason is over, so it is next stop regular season.
Woo!
Actually, next stop 53-man roster.
Then.
Yeah. To the regular season. 13 days away from Bills and Ravens. Sal Capaccio now on the Wester Hotline. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, guys, from beautiful Olean, New York.
Yeah, so it's time for the Coaches versus Cancer tournament again?
Yeah, today. Today's the day. Last night came down here for the great dinner. It was awesome. You know, just a lot of the college basketball coaches, and of course, Mark Schmidt down here at St. Bonaventure University, his wife, Anita. They're the hosts for the 716 chapter of Coaches versus Cancer. Woj is here last night, was with him.
Nice.
And today, I think he's going to be staying to play golf as well. Obviously, he's the general manager. That was great. And Fran Duffy is the keynote speaker tonight after golf. It's going to be a really nice night, really nice day, I should say, of golf and then into the evening.
How's the golf game been lately? You confident?
Not too bad. I think the last time I played was the Jim Kelly Classic, which was a couple of weeks ago, and I actually thought I played pretty well, but the group I was with was really good. So when you play okay and you're still with people who are a lot better than you,
yeah,
still doesn't make you feel that great about your game as much.
I find that I play better with people that are really good. But I guess
that
it depends on the
same
person.
Same way. Yep.
Yeah. Like if they're better
than
you.
I like that too.
You kind of elevate your own game
to
get as close to them as possible. So anyways, that'll be fun. Coaches versus Cancer today. Sal's an Olean. So Sal, getting to some stuff on the Bills from Saturday and then to tomorrow. 4 o'clock tomorrow for the official cut down deadline. But as we've seen already, we get reports. We see Schefter had a list last night of the guys that we've already heard about or seen for the Bills. Going into tomorrow, I guess, did anything change for you on Saturday for who you thought would make this team? Or maybe just Tre'Davious White's injury maybe would have played into that too.
You know, I was a little bit more on the fence on Tyrell Shavers, but I just think that it's very hard to keep him off the field. And then I really watched. It's not just the catch, right? The catch makes you go, okay, like this guy, he's done everything. He made a big play in a game. Like that might earn him a spot. Like to me, I'm watching how much special teams is he playing? What is he doing on special teams? And, you know, he played a lot of special teams that night. I had the snap counts. I'd have to go back and look. But either way, he was on the kickoff coverage team or the kickoff, blocking unit. He's, covering punts. He's doing different things. And I just think that they're putting him out there to make sure. It's one of two things. Either, hey, like, we don't really know if he can, so we have to find out. Or let's just make sure if we're going to do this that he can do these things. I think at the end of the day, I have him on my 53-man roster. I think that he did enough in preseason as a receiver and was able to play enough on special teams to be able to do that. So that was one guy for me. I think the Tre'Davious White injury is interesting because we still don't know the timeline on it, right? There's a few different scenarios here, and this ties into what I saw also on Saturday night. So let me just walk through it. Number one, let's just say Tre'Davious White is healthy and he can play week one, which we don't know. I think that is bad news for Dane Jackson. It's probably either Dane Jackson or Jamarcus Ingram fighting for a spot, I think, because I doubt they would move on from Dorian Strong, sixth-round pick, but they could. Could be him. So let's just say it's Dane Jackson. I think if Tre'Davious White is healthy, it probably means, he's released and then put on the practice squad. We'll see. If Tre'Davious White is out anything long term, I think you have to keep Dane Jackson. You need an outside corner.
Yep.
Because Jamarcus can do it, but he also provides nickel and dime safety and a lot of other things that you would want to use him for. I think the nuance here is, what if it's, well, he might miss a couple weeks, but, we're going to get him back soon after that. That's an area where, well, then what do you do? Do you maybe release Dane and just remember, you can elevate guys, right? Two elevations. And you could then elevate him for a couple of games without using a roster spot. Would you even consider putting Trey on IR to return to save a roster spot?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where I go. And then I watch the game, and Dane Jackson's playing late into the game.
Very late. Yeah.
So I think that could mean two things. could mean that, okay, we know what happens when guys play late in the game sometimes, that generally a lot of times isn't great for them. But maybe that's good news for Trey's injury because of that, right? Yeah. They're not protecting, really protecting another outside corner.
If it's not Trey White, Sal, like, what would you expect their defense, how their defense would be impacted in week one, week two, if he can't play for a game or two and it is Dane Jackson, or if it is Jamarcus Ingram or somebody else? Do you feel like they're in trouble at the position, or that they've been so rock solid at kind of filling in that spot? Like, it feels like they've had many times throughout the years where, hey, Xavier Rhodes is showing up off the street and playing, or Josh Norman at his age, or when Levi Wallace is an undrafted free agent, that there have been so many times where they've just plug and played a corner, but now they don't have Hyde and Poyer back there, so maybe you would see that as being a little different.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be concerned for sure. I mean, right now it's already a bit of a concern, an area where safety has been, you know, something we've talked a lot about, and they haven't had those two guys available together, Taylor Rapp and Cole Bishop. And then at corner, right, there's always been a question. What is Tre'Davious White right now in his career? And we saw him have really good days in camp and then have a couple days where he wasn't so good. So I think that's been a question. And then you have Christian Benford, I think, who's at least really steady out there and you can rely on. You know, I know a lot of people, you know, wonder, why didn't they do more? Well, they did use their first-round pick, but unfortunately he's not available. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, they did that, and then they brought back a couple of veterans. There were other guys out there as well. But, you know, now you're in a situation where if Tre'Davious White can't go, that's the thing I would say, Joe. You got to have somebody that you at least trust and rely on. And I know, I get it. I get it from fans all the time. Well, they just bring guys back who know their system too much. Well, there's something to that that they feel comfortable with. And the Bills aren't unique. Most teams do this where, you know, if you have somebody that you trust and not make a mistake and at least get you a baseline level of play, then that's where you turn to. And in this case, it would be Dane Jackson. But I mean, yeah, you're not going to walk Dane Jackson out there and everybody go, okay, we're totally set at the other corner. You're going to wonder, you know, what's he going to do here? Now, I do think that opponent could matter here, right? Week one is the Baltimore Ravens. They have some nice receivers. They're not receiver-centric. They're more tight end-centric, right? They're more of a run team. The one thing I would tell you that Dane Jackson does give you, if he has to play, he can tackle. He can set he can help on the edge, and he can tackle. And you're playing a good run team. Like, that's something you could feel confident in. But I think it's a tough spot here to try and figure out, I guess what you'd say, the roster gymnastics of this whole thing. And the other guy that I didn't really talk too much about is Dorian Strong. Like, do you want to release Dorian Strong and have another team have the ability to claim a sixth-round pick that you just drafted and developed for the last few months and think that, you know, he might be someone you could use over the next few years? It's not just about 2025. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, somebody made a good point to me on X yesterday. Well, you shouldn't think like that. They said, if he's good enough, he's good enough. If he's not, he's not. I understand that sentiment. But look at today, what Tre'Davious White's on a one-year deal. Dane Jackson's on a one-year deal. Jamarcus Ingram, I think, might have 1 year left. Like, you have to have guys in the pipeline that you develop as well, and you have to think about what happens down the road if you lose those guys right now.
Well, speaking of, you know, bringing back guys that they know, yesterday the, you know, news comes out that the Bills are intending to sign Jordan Phillips to their 53-man roster, not the practice squad, is the report that I saw. So if that's the case, Sal, what does that really mean for the defensive tackle position? Because it didn't feel like a position that needed a Jordan Phillips type add this late in the game, considering the suspension with Ogunjobi coming up. And to me, the guy that this spells some trouble for is their third round pick of last year, Dwayne Carter.
It could. I thought about him, Nate. I mean, I don't know. It's tough for me to make sense of it. I think it's got to be one of three guys, obviously, but let's walk through them. Okay. It could be for Dwayne Carter, and I agree. Like, he has not flashed, and he played late into the preseason.
Yep.
Let's go back to, though, are you going to bail on a guy that you just drafted in,
yeah,
what was it, third or fourth
round? Third round.
Fourth round last year.
Yep.
Third round last year.
Yep.
Are you going to bail? It could happen. It's not, like, out of the realm of possibility, but are you going to bail on a guy like that who, you know, you just drafted in the third round? He's a young player still. And you're developing. Okay, yes, there's a possibility there. Then I think about Daquan Jones. $5.5 million savings if you move on from Daquan Jones, right? That's a pretty good chunk considering the Bills right now are really tight against the cap. And have you seen enough from Deion Walker and TJ Sanders to say, you know what, that's something we're comfortable with doing? And then you have Larry Ogunjobi, which is really interesting because obviously he's suspended for 6 weeks. but he's not going to count on the roster. So you could cut him and save money, but you don't need the roster spot. Like the thing I keep coming back into my head is this. Let's say it's for Larry Ogunjobi. Let's say they decide Larry Ogunjobi is the guy. We're going to move on from him. Is there really a need to bring in another guy in the 53 right now? There's not, because he's not counting a roster spot.
Right. And even if you would see him maybe playing that role later, that means someone else at another position then, right, would have to go. And I don't know what you know, Sal, is typical for them, but them carrying six defensive tackles on the 53, usually seems like more than they normally would.
No, they won't. Unless there's an injury they have to deal with that they don't want to put a guy in IR that we don't know about, right?
Right.
Then you can think about that. Let's just say we find out that, you know, Deion Walker or TJ Sanders mm-hmm. had something happen in the game and they might miss a couple weeks. They don't want to put him on IR to return. Yeah, that could be a scenario, Joe, but it's not something you normally do. To me, you have five defensive tackles making this team as of now before Jordan Phillips signing. Ed Oliver, Daquan Jones, Dwayne Carter, TJ Sanders, Deion Walker. Like, those are your five. I mean, you bring in Jordan Phillips, somebody's gone. I just don't know where that's coming. We know it's not Walker or Sanders, right? So it's mm-hmm. one of the other three, including, or one of the other four, including Larry Ogunjobi.
Here's my only, I guess, thought on it not being Daquan Jones. And I get the money side of it, Sal. My concern would be you're then turning over a room that you've been trying to, you know, kind of create this changeover to younger players. You're immediately going to be relying on two rookies and then a second-year player at a pretty important position for them. And that's obviously to say that Ogunjobi is going to be back at some point if he's not the guy that they end up moving on. I guess I have a tough time getting to Daquan Jones just based on the fact that this isn't a coaching staff that typically likes to just throw the board at a young player or two young players for that inside the middle. That would be my only hesitation or only thought against a Daquan Jones move.
No, I get it, but I think then you say, well, that's why we bring in another veteran.
Right, yeah, mm-hmm. Process of elimination on that, I guess, yeah.
But, I mean, well, you say if it is, then you're bringing in a guy that's
true.
Jordan Phillips, they're about the same age.
And knows the system, right? Yep.
Right, so you could look at it that way too, which is, you're moving off one because you're turning it over to the young guys. What we're all really doing is getting a cheaper veteran who's in here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did look into it, guys. I think that Larry Ogunjobi's week one, his base salary is guaranteed even if he's suspended.
Okay.
On the roster week one. Okay, but okay. he does forfeit 1/18th of that salary.
For every game.
1/17th
right?
Yep. For every game. That, you know, so that cuts that in half. Here's the other part of it, though. Think about this. However, the minimum salary for a veteran to sign is like $1.2 million anyway, a guy like Jordan Phillips. So you got to guarantee that if he's on the week one roster.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's just really, really interesting what's happening here. And I don't know exactly what to make of it. I just think I've landed on it's got to be for either Ogunjobi, but you don't need the roster spot for him.
Right.
But the money could matter. Daquan Jones, because the money would matter a lot there. Or Dwayne Carter, because you just don't think that he's progressed and you now have two young guys in the system to take that spot anyway.
Sal Capaccio with us on the West Her Hotline. To the offense, Sal, offensive line, what's the biggest question you think there? Is it what they do at center because of Van Pran Granger not really practicing all offseason? Or, I mean, tackle obviously would be up in the air also, right?
Cedric Van Pran Granger.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Almost definitely, to me, is going to be on the PUP list. He just gets transferred to the PUP list. He does not have to count in the 53. So we don't think about him there as far as a roster spot, but you do have to think about who the backup center is. And I think that's probably Alec Anderson at this point. Alec Anderson is just a guy that, you know, can play a lot of different positions, and he's done a really good job there. So to me, you're going to the season with Connor McGovern and then Alec Anderson as your backup center, and then you get 4 weeks for Cedric Van Pran Granger to kind of get up to speed. The biggest question for me is what happens with both Ryan Vandermark and Chase Lunt. Ryan Vandermark is a swing tackle. He's been in the system 3 years. He's actually started and played well when he's been called upon. He has been a guy here, though, that he's fighting with let's start with Tylan Grable, who's in concussion protocol, who had that job last year and made Ryan Vandermark inactive on game day because Grable was the guy. He's in concussion protocol, though, and he hasn't practiced in a couple weeks. He was in a red jersey last week. You also have Travis Clayton, who's in concussion protocol. That's another tackle you're down. Not that he would necessarily take that job. Richard Garage is interesting, too. I think Richard Garage they like. He's been in this battle as well. So there's Vandermark. And then, you know, I've seen, you know, talk that could they move on? Could he be one of the guys that they say, okay, at the end of the day, you know, we're going to trade something, get an asset because we have another guy. Well, that other guy could be Chase Lunt. Chase Lunt played left tackle a lot on Saturday night against the Bucks. So he's played all over the line. As a guy that you drafted, seventh round pick, could you move on from him? Sure. If you do, he's got to go through waivers. You might not get him back. So I think those are things you just have to think about. To me, they will keep 9 offensive linemen. I think the locks are obviously Deion Dawkins, Spencer Brown, Connor McGovern, Osiris Torrance, David Edwards, and even Alec Anderson. I think from there, anything can happen. Tylan Grable, Ryan Vandermark, Chase Lunt. That's who I have. Cedric Van Pran Granger on PUP. And then you have a bunch of other guys that, I mean, a guy interesting for me is Kendrick Green. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if you keep Kendrick Green on the roster, but that's a really nice guy to have, at least on the practice squad, because he did play center a lot to fill in. And the guy was just a warrior. I mean, he was banged up half the time at camp and still going out there and going off with trainers, going back in. So I think Kendrick Green's a nice guy to have. I just don't see him making the roster.
Yeah, he started 19 games at center in the NFL, but he's dealt with a lot of injuries right over his career. And right, that would come down to also, I don't know, would they factor in Anderson in his role as the sixth offensive lineman in this at all? And would they want? I guess not, because if they've been practicing him at center, they would know that they would want him to do both, be the backup center and play on as the sixth offensive lineman.
But Joe, I think Jackson Hawes is your sixth offensive lineman. He's a tight end.
Right. Well, you think they're done with the Anderson thing completely then?
Maybe. I think you could have a scenario where it happens. I just don't think you're going to see it run like you did last year. To me, that's all you're doing there is replacing Jackson Hawes with that guy, right? Which is, okay, now we have a sixth offensive line, but he's actually a tight end and we can throw him the ball. You know, and it makes it really challenging on the defense. So, yeah, I don't think that you're going to have the same kind of situation as you did last year. I don't know if you guys caught the nugget during the game, but Eric Wood said he talked to Aaron Cromer. Mm-hmm. And Aaron Cromer, according to Eric Wood, said Jackson Hawes is the best blocking tight end he's ever coached.
Mm. Wow. Wow. As a rookie,
think about that for a second.
High praise.
I mean,
to me, you don't keep a guy as you don't have an offensive lineman as your sixth guy unless you just have a special package once in a while. I think when you're going to run it in the six offensive line traditional way that the Bills did a lot last year, it's no longer an offensive lineman. It's a guy who has a number 85 and you can throw him the ball.
Did Aaron Cromer have a crossover with Lee Smith? Because he's the first name that I think of for best Bills blocking tight end. No, maybe not. Lee Smith was with the Bills 2011-14, and then 19-20. Cromer is 15-16, and then 22 to present. So I guess actually maybe they didn't cross over. But either way, doesn't matter. That's just the first great blocking tight end that I thought of from the Bills. Sal Capaccio with us, 53-man roster projection. He tweeted it out. He's got his arrow up, arrow down piece at the website from Saturday's preseason game, which was all Shane Buechele, Sal. And I don't think we really are wondering about who makes the active roster, right? Like, that'll be Allen and Trubisky. But what about, like, will they go Mike White and Buechele on the practice squad? Just Buechele? Just what? Like, I guess how will they operate with the quarterback room?
I can't see them keeping two on the practice squad. I think spots are a little bit too valuable, and you have to get reps for guys, right? So, you know, you don't do that. So I think Shane Buechele made a really good case for himself to be on the practice squad. They really like him. You know, his moxie, you guys saw it. I said this so much before about Shane Buechele, and glad he was able to go out there and finish a game. But, you know, I know going back to last year, I heard a lot about how much they just really love his toughness. They love his moxie. The guy just wants to go out in the game, right? He just wants to play. And that's what he wants to do. And we saw that was good for him. 25 of 30, 278, highest passer of the week, I believe, in the NFL in preseason week number 3. And the post-game interview on the field, I tweeted it out. If you get a chance, I tweeted out the post-game interview I did with him on the field. It was great. He was emotional. And he was emotional because he said it was the first time he had ever played a full game in the NFL, like preseason, regular season. Obviously, he's never done that. But, you know, that's pretty cool for a guy like that. And last year, he got hurt in that first preseason game, never played another snap. He was on the practice squad or IR all season. So I just can't see them keeping four. But man, maybe that game forced their hand, and they're going to say, let's just do it for now and see where it goes in case we want to make a decision later. But I think that's going to be tough. I agree with you. Trubisky is number two. I've always leaned Mike White as the practice squad guy. I think Bouchel makes it a conversation now. I still think it's probably White, but I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Bouchel leaps him because of that game.
Last thing for you, Sal. Returner right now, how you see that playing out and whether that's close? Because I know Laviska Shenault has done some punt returning this offseason despite never really doing it in the NFL. So how do you think that battle ended up looking as we wrapped up the preseason here?
I think Shenault only returned one punt in a preseason game, though, this year, right? I think it was only one. Okay. I don't think he did one Saturday night, if I remember right. I have to go back and look. You guys know where I've been on this for a while. I'm not coming off. I think Brandon Codrington's on this roster. I think he's the main punt returner. Nothing I have seen through training camp or preseason has given me reason to change my mind about Brandon Codrington being this team's number one punt returner. I just think he is. Now, I understand he does not offer much as a defender. Like you just say he is a punt returner, and he is literally a guy at the very end of a game. If you need to get through at the end of a game, you can put him on the field, but you don't want to have to do that. It's just not what his strong suit is, playing defense. He's a nickel corner now, by the way. He was outside last year. He's a nickel corner now. The question is, did Laviska Shenault do enough as a kick returner and other special teams areas for them to justify a spot? And I just don't think he did, because even on offense, he caught one pass the other night. By the way, guys, he also lost contain on one of those kick returns. Like, he was covering the kick. And I'll put it on him, but it's everybody, right? But it looked like to me he got sucked in when I'm watching it. Boy, it would just be surprising to me to keep both of them, and I just don't see how Shenault has done enough to vault over Codrington, especially because I think Shavers did enough. Like, you can't justify another receiver even on top of Shavers making it, right? Unless, I mean, we haven't had the Curtis Samuel conversation or right. Elijah Moore. Unless you feel that Samuel or Moore aren't making it and you want to have Shavers and Shenault make it, I think it's just way too tough for Shenault. And it's okay if Shenault, if you can get him back in the practice squad, you got a returner, a guy who can play on offense a little bit, right? I mean, that's a nice guy to have on your practice squad if you need him.
And even though he was like one of the best kick returners in football last year, say like Codrington, I mean, he looked great in punt returns all year. He looked trustworthy at it. He averaged only a yard less per kick return than Shenault did. So
He could do it. That's right.
Yeah, it's not like the advantage of Shenault over Codrington in the kick return duty was so great last year that you would think that it overcomes the rest of it. Very very quickly on Moore and Samuel, do you think they are likely to make the team? Do you think there's still a question of that?
I think Moore is very likely to make the team. I think Samuel is pretty likely, but I do think that his availability or lack thereof is something they have to think about. He did not make the trip with the team because he was sick, and things were trending well for him, and so that happened. But I do think he put enough work in at the end of camp there when he got healthy and on the field that they feel good about that. It's just, do you feel good enough about him staying healthy, staying on the field? You move on from him, you're taking over a $7 million dead cap hit. Now, that's already accounted for. Whether he's on the roster or not, he's counting for that money. That's already spent. You would save $500,000, but boy, I think right now, as I look at it, I think Curtis Samuel's on this roster, on the 53, but I do think there's a decision they have to talk about there.
And then I'll let you go on this. What's the schedule for this week? Like, when we might find out about an update about Tre'Davious White?
So there's really no media today. It's going to be all roster decisions from the team coming down. We could still like get a roster move or two. And then same thing tomorrow until 4 p.m. 4 p.m. is the roster deadline. We will not hear from the Bills really until probably Wednesday. That's my guess. We don't have that official yet. But generally, Brandon Bean talks to the media on Wednesday. And then not even until later Wednesday, because they got to formulate their practice squad after all the releases and seeing around the league what's happening. So I don't know if we'll get anything until like Wednesday afternoon, guys, to be quite honest with you.
All right. Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Enjoy the tournament, Sal, for Coaches versus Cancer, and we'll talk tomorrow.
Got to shoot low today. Hey, you know who's in there? You know who's here? No, I saw. He actually lives in Western New York. I'm going to blow your mind. Did you know?
Vince Carter. I'm just guessing.
Vince was at the game the other night.
I've seen him everywhere.
Christian Laettner.
No, but they see that. You wouldn't be surprised about that. And I'm like, why is this guy? Right. But we're hanging out with him last night. He's here. He's playing golf. He lives in Western New York. Former Colts kicker Mike Vanderjack.
Because he was coaching. Idiot. Wasn't he coaching high school football?
He is.
I hope
he's coaching. He is the kicking coach.
Yeah.
I guess I could tell. I mean, he's told me he works with Medina High School.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I called a Medina game a couple of years ago, and I remember.
Yes.
That. Okay. Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I remember him. Did Peyton Manning call him our idiot kicker that one time?
Yeah, because he had said something he kind of regretted. He tells the story last night, but without me getting into it too much, he said something he shouldn't have about Peyton, and Peyton said, that's our idiot liquored up kicker or something like
liquored,
that at the Pro Bowl. Something like that. But anyway, it was just interesting. I'm like, wait, what is Mike Vanderjagt doing here? He's from just over the border.
Yeah, Oakville.
And
Oakville.
Yeah, that's right. But so he still lives in Western New York, and it was just interesting. Like, oh, wow, he's here as well, and he'll be playing today.
Cool. All right, go low. Thanks, Sal.
Thanks, guys.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline, his 53-man roster projection. You can read his arrow up, arrow down piece at WGR550.com. Quick timeout when we come back. Evan Lazar on the Patriots, 14 teams in 14 days when we come back here on WGR.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.